All right, it's 5 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and call our August 19th, 2024 Columbia City Council pre-council to order. We have one item on the agenda, which is a conversation about our police and fire pension and the actuary report. So I'm going to kick it over, I'm assuming, just kick it to Matthew. Finance.
So you're going to
kick it to Jim.
Yes, I am. So we have a brief presentation from the finance department. Then we'll present our actuaries here as well as our financial advisor, and they will present in that order.
Thank you.
Okay, so we kind of wanted to put a few slides together, just kind of give you an overview of the police and fire pension and kind of covering covering the basic points of like how many participants we have in it, how many people, how much we're paying out each year, what the contributions look like. So this is kind of what this is going to cover. So the police and fire pension is a defined benefit pension. So that means when someone joins the fire department or the police department, they will receive a pension based on the time of service and their highest average salary calculation. Within the police and fire pension, we have four plans kind of under that big umbrella. We have a pre-2012 fire plan, a post-2012 fire plan, a pre-2012 police plan, and a post-2012 police plan. And each one of these plans has different calculations and requirements for time of service and highest average salary. So basically what that means is that if you're in one of those plans, the time you have to work and what you earn for that time is different than some of the people in the other plans.
And Jim, do you mind if we ask questions while it's
going
along?
Yeah, whenever.
So I think one question, and both of those were negotiated with the representative unions at those times, is that correct?
Yeah, back in 2012, that's when there was modifications done to the plans where these two separate tiers for the fire and the police plan were created.
Thank you.
So just kind of covering the participants, the fire and police retirees. So currently we have 179 retirees under the fire pension, under the group surviving spouses, disability qualified participants, and just your regular retirees. In FY23, the city paid out a little over $9 million to the people under that fire pension. And then for the police, we have 198 retirees, surviving spouses, and disability-qualified participants. In FY23, there was a payout to those participants of $7.2 million. And what this slide kind of shows is the history of the total participants in the plan and kind of how it's changed over the last 6 years. The FY24 numbers are estimates, but they should be pretty close to what we expect them to be. But this just kind of shows the trend of the pool of our retirees continues to grow, and the amount we're paying them out equally has continued to grow over that same time frame. Did anybody have a question on that slide? Sorry. Okay, so this slide here kind of goes over the pension contribution. So people, the officers and the firefighters within the pension do contribute a portion of their paycheck to the pension, and then obviously the city contributes a portion to the pension based on the salaries of those participants. So here we have the different tiers, those four tiers I mentioned, the pre-2012 tiers and the post-2012 tiers. And you can see the employee contributions for each of those tiers. And then we have a kind of the bottom three rows breaks down the employer contribution. So that normal employer cost, that is what would be the cost for each participant by the city if we were 100% funded. So like for the pre-2012 police, we would pay 21.67% of their salary if we were 100% funded. Because we're not 100% funded, we have this unfunded liability cost that we have to put into to try to get this pension up to 100% funded. And for the police side, we have to contribute an additional 34.4%. And on the fire side, it's 41.4%. So then you get to the total employer cost of those bottom lines, which is what we have to what the city has to contribute for each of those officers or firefighters, according to what plan they fall into. And this is the amount, this is just kind of a six-year breakdown of the amount that the fire employees and the police employees have contributed. Fire contributes a substantial amount more to the pension than police does, and the main reason for that is firefighters don't receive a Social Security. They don't pay into Social Security, and they don't receive Social Security when they retire. So their contributions to this pension kind of are there to offset that lack of getting a Social Security, where police officers do get Social Security, so their contributions aren't quite as much. And this kind of fluctuates a little bit due to the amount the employees are making and the amount of active officers we have in those divisions, but you can see it averages between $1.5 to $1.7 million per year. That's what the employees contribute. This slide here kind of covers the city's contributions, and it kind of looks at those contributions as a comparison to the operations expenses for each of those departments. So it breaks that down for the last 6 years, just like the slide prior did. And you can see, as for fire, the contributions are hovering around 30%. And that's a bit higher than the police department, again, because there's no Social Security payments. So the city isn't paying into Social Security for the employees either. So there's a bigger portion going into this pension for them. And then on the police side, you can see it's hovering around 17 to 18%. And over the last 6 years, we're going to be contributing close to $70 million into this pension. The other thing I wanted to highlight here is in 2023, on the total contributions line, you can see that went up from $11 million in 22 to $13 million in 23. That was due largely to this, every 4 years we do a evaluation of the pension and the assumptions. And I think Mita and Heidi will go into that a little further. But due to those changes in assumptions, the city started contributing more per employee to help offset those changes in assumptions. And this graph just kind of gives you a visualization of how much the city has contributed for each fire and police division and kind of how it's looked over the last 6 years. As you can see, it's been an upward trend, and it has accelerated in 23 due to that reevaluation of our assumptions and the need to put more money into the pension for that reason. So.
Good question. You said that's every 4 years?
Yeah, roughly every 4 years there's an evaluation done, experience evaluation. So it looks at various assumptions that are made. The biggest one is the assumed rate of return. And I think Mita and Heidi will probably go into that a little bit so they can kind of explain it more. But essentially what occurred was we had an assumed rate of return of 7%, and we dropped it down to 6.25%. And when you do that, what you're basically saying is we don't expect to earn as much from our investments as we had said we were, and therefore in order to make up that difference, the city has to contribute more money in order to kind of cover that gap from what we thought we were going to get to what we think now we're going to get. So,
has that happened, 4 years prior?
Yeah, it's been a trend.
Something similar happened?
It's been a trend now for probably four or five, since the Great Recession, I'd say, probably.
We can talk about this.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make
an
asterisk to ask you guys when you're up there. Thank you.
I think that's all the slides we got, so we'll kick it over to Mita and Heidi, and they can take over from here. This is the right slide, right, Mita?
Yes.
Oh.
You do your full screen.
There you go.
Well, good evening, everyone. My name, for those that I haven't been able to introduce myself to, is Mita Draslov. With me today is my colleague, Heidi Berry. We are from Gabriel Roeder Smith & Company, and we are the actuaries for the Columbia Police and Fire Retirement Fund. I just want to take this opportunity to the council to allow us to present the actuarial evaluation results. Having actuaries come to a 5 o'clock meeting when there's another meeting happening soon thereafter, I commend you for asking us to come. Matthew and James did a very good job of going over some broad details of the actuarial evaluation, but we're going to sort of delve in a little bit deeper into the numbers and provide some context on why some things are the way they are and why they're not the way some people were hoping that they should be. The purpose of doing the annual evaluation is twofold. So the annual evaluation is done every year. And one is, so for example, for the September 30th, 2023 actuarial evaluation, the main purpose is to determine the employer contribution rate that the city needs to contribute for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2025. A second and almost equally important objective is to measure the funding progress of the system. And what we mean by that is what portion of what we call the actuarial accrued liabilities. And basically, that's a fancy way of saying the liabilities associated with service that our membership has already performed as of the valuation date. What portion of those liabilities are covered by the system assets? So those are two very important reasons to perform the annual valuation. Heidi's gonna go over a few slides to talk about the sort of the background of the valuation, and then I'm going to come back and talk about the meat of the results for the latest annual valuation.
So this graph here is an illustration meant to kind of give you an idea of the benefit of pre-funding the system. So if you look at this green line that's increasing, that is the benefits coming out of the system. That's what you're paying. That's a pay-as-you-go. So at the beginning of the system start date, if you're doing pay-as-you-go, you're not paying benefits out because nobody's retired. And then over time, benefits are paid out. You see that increase, and eventually it'll level off in a mature system. The benefit to pre-funding the system is this horizontal dotted blue line. That is, so at the beginning of the system, you start putting money in right away, even though no benefits are going out. You have the money coming in, you're investing that money. The benefit is the crossover between the dotted horizontal blue line and that increasing green line there, or dotted blue line. Underneath the dotted line are your employer and employee contributions that are going in. The remainder is expected to be paid out with your investment return. So that's the benefit to pre-funding, is you can actually invest your assets, earn some income on it to help pay out those benefits. So when we perform the actuarial evaluation every year, there's a lot of pieces that go into it. The first thing we look at is the census data. So we get a snapshot of the data as of September 30, and for purposes of today, we're discussing September 30, 2023, but every year we get a snapshot of the data. We put that into our system. We have to value those members, the active members that are in the system who could potentially get a benefit, your retirees who are receiving a benefit, and then your potential deferred members who may receive a benefit in the future. We also look at, obviously, the asset data, because that's a huge piece of the pie. The census data gives us a way to calculate the cost. Then you have your assets, which offset the accrued liabilities, and I'll go into that a little bit more later. The benefit provisions are the system's provisions, and as Jim stated earlier, there are four different sets of provisions. There's police and fire pre-2012 and post-2012. So there's different benefit structures going on, and we have to take that into consideration when we're developing the costs. And then we have to make a lot of actuarial assumptions. So we don't know when people are going to retire or die. We have to make assumptions about that. In terms of economic assumptions, we review the economic assumptions on an annual basis. So we are required to determine if those assumptions are reasonable. If we don't think they are, we would come to go to the board and recommend changes in those economic assumptions. We do an experience study every 4 to 5 years, and that's where we get into a more in-depth review of the demographic data. So looking at, again, at the retirements, deaths, things like that. We know things aren't going to stay the same forever, so we have to tweak those assumptions as appropriate for the plan, what has happened in the past, and what potential trends might be going on in the future. We have to consider all of that when we're developing our assumptions. And then finally, we have to come up with an actuarial funding method, a way to pay for the benefits that you're promising your members.
Yeah, can we just stay on that slide for a second? So when Heidi mentioned that we look at the investment return assumption each year, we look at it to ensure it's still reasonable to use it for actuarial evaluation purposes. That's not to say that we look at it every year to change it. Every 4 or 5 years, we do a comprehensive review of all of the assumptions. The two sets of assumptions that Heidi talked about are economic assumptions and demographic assumptions. Demographic assumptions are assumptions that happen to the membership. You know, how long are individuals going to live, post-retirement, even pre-retirement? What are the chances an individual may retire if they're eligible to do so? What are the chances that an individual may terminate employment prior to being eligible to retire and either take a refund of their contributions or take a deferred benefit? Actuaries, our training is more on the demographic side of assumptions. Actuaries are really good at knowing when, my apologies, but when people are gonna die, you know, what are the chances that they'll actually retire? Looking rear view mirror, generally speaking, gives us a pretty good indication of what's gonna happen going forward. On the economic side of things, that's where it gets a little bit more tricky. Actuaries have some expertise in developing those assumptions, but those sort of assumptions, we look to other experts in other fields in determining whether the investment return assumption, which is by far the most important assumption that's used for the valuation, is reasonable. And what we look at basically is forward-looking capital market expectations on various asset classes. So I think Jim had mentioned that recently the 7% was reduced to 7.25%. Prior to that, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, 7.5 was reduced to 7. Well, 5 years before that, 8 was reduced to 7.5. For the longest period of time, for basically, I'll suggest, 1995 through 2010, by far the most common actuarial assumption for the investment return assumption used nationwide, for many systems was 8%. You would see that number over and over again. And many systems were achieving. And then the 2000s hit. And we bring up the global financial crisis for two reasons. One, it was a devastating effect in that particular year. The second thing it did, and almost more importantly, is it dampened capital market expectations going forward. It was a new normal, so that people, or very educated people, said we can't earn as much in bonds because interest rates got lowered much so. Equities are just not going to return what they did in the go-go 80s and the go-go 90s and things of that nature. So the global financial crisis really, and not just the City of Columbia Police and Fire Retirement Fund, but statewide systems across the country, municipal and county systems across the country. I think that's a very important point for some further discussion.
I heard some financial advisors call it the lost decade.
The last couple decades.
So what is the current expectation for your interest rates or your
6.25.
return? 6.25.
Yes. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Okay, so we're just going to briefly go through the census data that we used for the valuation. Looking at the police fund, you can see that the active participant decreased pretty substantially from 2022 to 23. There were 153 active members with 10.2 million in payroll, and it decreased to 134 with 9.96 million in payroll. So that's important on the demographic experience for the plan for the year. There were a lot of new retirements and also quite a few withdrawals as well. The total payroll decreased quite a bit, so Mita will talk about that a little bit more when he's talking about the actual contribution rates and how the total payroll and the changes in total payroll impact the rates. For the fire group, we actually saw the opposite. In 2022, there were 143 active members with 11.1 million in payroll, and that increased to 155 with 11.6 million in payroll. So there were a lot of new hires on the fire side. The retirees, Jim talked about this a little bit not long ago. So for 2023, at the end of the year, police had 198 members receiving benefits with 6.6 million being paid out, and fire was 176 with 8.9, I believe that says, being paid out. So now we move to the asset side. So we don't use a market value of assets when we're determining the results of the system. So if you look in row J, I can't move it.
If you go by the green, you can.
There we go. That's a little better. All right. So row J, you can see in 2021, it was 20.6% return. In 22, it was negative 15.5. In 23, it was 13.5. A lot of volatility there. So we smooth out the assets so that your contribution rates are not jumping up and down. Yes, they do change. They go up and down, but not nearly as much if you were to use the market value. Mm-hmm. So we have the smoothing method that we use. So we start in row B with the market value at the end of the year of 167.7 million. In row E1, this 20.1 million is your market return. So again, 13.5%, it was a good year. We actually expected 6.25%. We got higher than that. So the dollar amount that we expected was that 10.4 million. The difference between the 20 and the 10 is this 9.67. That's the part that we smooth in over the next 4 years. So 9.6 divided by 4 is this 2.4 million that you have here, and it's spread out over 4 years. Then we have the prior gains and losses here that are being recognized in the smoothing. And in total, we recognize a negative $2 million loss. So we end up with a funding value of $174.4 million, which is higher than our market value of $167 million. So that difference is this negative $6.6 million here that you see. And that is the amount of loss that we still have to recognize in the next 3 years. And that is played out here. So you can see what we're expecting for the next 3 years in terms of how we're going to realize that. So in 2024, we have just under a $2 million loss that's going to be phased in. In 2025, see, we lose this 2021 gain there. So you see this big decrease down to a $7 million loss in the 2025 valuation. And then we have a gain back in 2026 of $2.4 million. And we still have a lot of unknown here, so we don't know what those valuation results are going to look like. This is just the direction that we would expect to see that rate going, not knowing what these extra numbers are going to actually fill in to look like. So in 2024 and 25, we're expecting upward pressure on the contribution rates. In 2026, there would be downward pressure, but again, we have a lot of missing information that we
Heidi, can't before say you for go sure. on, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
So the 2022, like that market, you know, dip, bigger than a dip, have you seen that kind of fluctuation in the years prior, or was that very rare?
There have been, the markets do go up and down. I don't know when it was that negative. It's been
that type of fluctuation in 2021 and 2022. I think the last time you would have seen that level of fluctuation was the global financial crisis.
Okay.
So this was basically the pandemic.
Right, right.
When basically the markets crashed and then they basically came back. I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off.
Okay, so then I guess my question is kind of, you know, when we have those sort of negative numbers that we're basically smoothing out for the next 3 years that you're working on, do companies or municipalities, do they ever try to contribute to try to make up that difference so that we don't have those negative numbers?
And let's be clear, it's not necessarily going to be the case that you are going to have those negative numbers. Because you could have a very good market rate of return in 2024 that will offset that negative $2 million. So it may happen, but it doesn't necessarily mean it will happen. Do some municipalities, given the fact that we call it losses in the pipes,
mm-hmm.
contribute more? I really haven't seen that very much. And probably one of the reasons you don't see that is you can equally likely have gains in the pipe, and they'll start contributing less. So you really don't want to do that.
I think I was asking because I know that the idea of this is it's a plan to get us to, right? It's a plan to get us to, was 20 or 30, you know, a plan to get us to fully funded. And if you have those dips, then you're kind of like your plan is slowed down. And so I was wondering, like, right. Is that then a practice that we should try to contribute so that we can get back on track?
And we'll talk about the plan to get to 100% funded. We'll call amortization payments. It's not this.
Okay.
It's a different concept. It's sort of like one of the contribution components that Jim talked about. And we're going to get to that on a different slide. But one thing I want to point out here that the average layperson doesn't fully appreciate is if you look at the market rate of return in 2021, 20.6, that's a terrific market return. In 2022, it was minus 15.5. The average layperson would say 2021 was better than 2022. You know, 20 is higher than negative 15. Except that your starting point wasn't zero, meaning that the expectation in 2021 was 7. So you beat your assumed rate of return on a market basis by about 13 percentage points. Conversely, in 2022, your starting point wasn't zero, it was 6.25. So if you subtract those two numbers, you actually lost about 21%. So
you're not making me feel better right now.
this is actuarial speaking.
Oh, okay.
Not,
all right.
Not investment.
You're gonna get
because you'll hear an actuary say, "You've made 3% this year. You have an investment loss, and it's because we're not comparing it to zero. We're comparing it to what we thought you were expected to earn, based upon our actuarial assumption, and that's my only."
Okay.
Reason for I'll try and bring up a nicer point. My next one. I've got some good ones, I'm hoping.
We're excited.
Okay, this might not be a good one, but let's go with it. So there are two, and Jim brought this up, there are two major components to the computed employer contribution rate. One is what we call the normal cost of benefits. The normal cost of benefits, it's just a fancy way of saying it's the cost of our active members accruing an additional year of service credit. So for example, on the police side of things, in total, the total normal cost for them for the pre-2012 benefits, it's 25.17. Members are contributing 3.5, so the employer is contributing 21.67. The post-2012 benefits are a little bit less generous. So you can see that the total normal cost isn't 25.17, it's 16.07. Members are contributing 4.5, so the employer is contributing 11.57. If you weight the two based upon their payrolls, the total normal cost is 16.32%. The second component of the employer contribution rate is the amortization payment required to finance the unfunded actuarial accrued liability. We have a specific amount of actuarial accrued liability. We have a certain amount of assets. The difference between those two numbers are right now is amortized over a 28-year period. So to get to the final contribution rate of 50.72, and let me just use the police total there, if I do my math right, it would be the 16.32% plus the 34.4%. Generally speaking, you would like your UAL contribution rate to be less than your normal cost contribution rate. Because in effect, your normal cost, you're paying for service that's going to happen in the future. Your unfunded accrued liability contribution basically is paying for service that's happened in the past where you just haven't met your actuarial experience, either investment return or individuals living longer or whatever the case may be. And a big contributor for what we call an actuarial loss. And an actuarial loss in our speak means that your liabilities are higher than we expected based upon our assumptions. And a big portion of the actuarial loss this year for the police side of things were pay increases higher than what we had assumed were going to happen. Terrific for the members. Can't say that's not a bad thing for the membership, but for system liabilities, if their pays are growing faster than what we assumed, hence their benefits are going to be higher at retirement, and hence their liabilities are going to be higher. Mm-hmm. Now I'll suggest that's a relatively recent phenomenon for many public employee retirement systems. For the longest period of time when inflation was quite low, we would see what we call pay gains. Their pays weren't increasing as fast, but with inflation taking off in the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen substantial actuarial losses on the pay side, not only in Colombia, and I'll suggest in many public safety type plans. I mean, they've had a very difficult go of things during the pandemic. And in many instances, there were probably well-justified compensation structures. And that's somebody else to comment on more articulately than I am. But I know I was able to work at home and Zoom and stuff like that. So it was a challenging time. On the fire side, Heidi wants me to speed it up.
Hold on a second. I don't know what I did there.
You're good.
There we go.
Okay.
Sorry.
I have a question. Why 28 year? Why?
That's an excellent question. Mm-hmm. I will try and answer it as best I can. So when we did the last experience study, we were at a 26-year amortization period. And remember that I talked about us going down from 8% to 7.5%, 7.5 to 7, 7 to 6.25. Those are very significant actuarial assumption changes that increase the unfunded accrued liability substantially. When the last experience study was being considered, there's not many times that I like extending the amortization period. I would like to finance that as quickly as possible. What I don't like happening is retirement systems maintaining what I'll suggest are a very optimistic set of actuarial assumptions, making really important decisions based upon that, and say, yeah, we're going to pay off our unfunded accrued liability in 10 years. And my response to that is, not a chance, unless something really happens in the markets. But you'll have plans that will still assume 7.5% or 7.75% when their experts are coming in and saying, we don't think you can earn 6.5% for the next 20 years. The numbers look better. I'll suggest that they are not a better, because there's no right measurement. They're all assumptions. But are there better justifications for certain assumptions? I'll suggest 100% so. So getting back to extending the amortization period. So one of the areas where I will bite my tongue and say, yes, I will support this, is if a better set of actuarial assumptions are being used to better reflect the liabilities of your system. And even by extending the amortization period, the employer contributions are going up still. I will not support extending the amortization period and allowing the employer contribution rate to go down, because I think that's counterintuitive.
Mia, can I jump in quick?
Please.
One of the reasons why, you know, as like Mia was saying about the increases to police salaries, how that affects things. Well, it's a pretty, you know, little changes affect a lot of different things. So the employer contribution rate, to kind of get us to a comfortable assumption where we think 6.25% is much more reasonable than 7, and if we were not going to change that amortization schedule, the amount the city would have to contribute would have increased even more so than what you saw on those charts I showed you earlier. So we have to balance a lot of different things when we're making those decisions for, like, if we were to do that, if we were to keep that same amortization rate and do that 6.25%, the constraints on our budget would be much more significant than saying, hey, let's get a more reasonable assumption, but let's push out that amortization rate so that we can get on the right track but not cause significant strains on our budget that might affect our ability to provide other services to the city. So the effects of this have an effect on all the general public. So when we make little changes to this, we have to look at the holistic picture
of doing these things. And the combination of adopting the new assumptions and extending out the amortization period still increased the total city's contribution by about $1.3 million. So we thought that was a reasonable thing to do. Now, if there are funds out there that can lower the amortization period and get us to 100% funded more quickly, as an actuary, are Heidi and I going to say, by all means, yes, please do that? The answer is yes. It's just a question of affordability, and unfortunately, that's not something that Heidi nor I can opine on with respect to the city's finances. Let's go to page 9. One thing that there's very important numbers on this page. So Remember I said the actual accrued liability is basically the liability associated with service that our members have already performed. So for the police portion of the retirement fund, the liabilities associated with individuals already in payment status, receiving benefits, is about $89.1 million. For our active members, it's just under $39 million. So for a total liability of $128 million. On the fire portion of the fund, individuals already in payment status, their liability is $133 million. Active members, about $68 million. A total accrued liability of $201 million. Roughly almost two-thirds of our entire liability is associated with individuals already in payment status. You're a quite mature plan. There are other systems out there like that, mostly public safety, but you have a significant portion of your liability associated with individuals already in payment status. That's something that you need to take into consideration.
Before you, really, just really quick, sorry, Maine. So we talk about the pre and post 2012 kind of plans. So in 2012, can you remind me, where do we think we would be at 2023? Like what percentage funded?
If all of the assumptions...
Yeah, like, yes, all of the magic happened on the path that you first showed us, that one.
Magic, I'm not sure we perform magic, but...
You kind of said you can predict death, so...
If all of the assumptions were met back in 2012, I'm trying to remember the funded ratios back then, which I think were on the order of 65%. My guess is we would be probably on the order of... 80 plus, that would be my guess. That's just a rough guess. But that would mean that we would still have a 7.5% assumption.
Yeah, I understand the assumptions have changed.
Right. But the plan was, absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the considerations for having the lower tier, the 2012, was to provide funds to basically finance a pretty significant unfunded liability at that time. So I think that was one of the considerations back then. That's a rough guess.
Okay. I won't hold you to it.
I think it's a pretty educated guess.
Okay.
I was just going to add. If you look at the police and this normal cost here, the total normal cost, this is, so theoretically after the 28 years, let's say we pay off the unfunded, you would see your contribution drop to something closer to that 11.57 and 20.27. That's like the ultimate goal if we pay off the unfunded, just to add an additional comment.
And if all assumptions are met, your employer contribution rate's actually expected to decline.
Right.
The reason being is you're going to be paying more normal costs on the 16.07 than the 25.17. A consideration that could be made is, okay, yeah, if all assumptions were met, that could happen. Maybe we don't want that to happen to accelerate the time period to get us to 100% funded. And I have seen retirement systems do that. If they have good experience, then they'll say, no, we won't let the employer contribution rate go down. They will, but they'll say, no, we want to just, we've already budgeted for that amount. That's already spoken for. And if we want to accelerate the time period to get to 100% funded, that's a consideration that might be useful. I said I was going to talk about happy things. That last one, I think, was happy. I think if I talk about anything on this page, it's not going to be happy. So I think I'll skip this one for now.
No emoticons.
Let's end on a happy note. So for the police group, the total employer contribution rate year over year is 50.5%. 0.72% versus last year's 47.06%. The primary reasons for the increase in the contribution rate was one, with the smooth asset valuation method, there was an investment loss. The pay loss for the police group was about on the order of about $2 million in more liability than was anticipated, and that's a primary reason for the rate increase, in addition to their payroll being reduced. So your amortization payment that you need is basically a fixed dollar, and that fixed dollar is going to increase by 2.75% each year. That's the expectation. If your payroll goes down, the denominator goes down, so the rate goes up, you still need that same dollar amount. You're just dividing it by a lower payroll. Conversely, for the fire group, and this is where we'll end on good news, their employer contribution rate went down to 68% from 70.22% from the prior fiscal year. Their total payroll increased by approximately 4.1%, so that denominator was bigger, so hence the rate goes down, and they had a little bit of a pay gain this year as opposed to the police portion of the fund. And with that, we'd be happy to take any more questions you may have.
Okay, Lisa, and then Nick does this when he's about to ask. So, Lisa.
Is that what I do?
Yes.
Oh.
I understand all of the experiences. I just want to confirm that the total payroll decreasing, that's because basically we had less police. Is that correct?
Right.
Yes.
You didn't. There was the reduction in the number of police officers, roughly about 150-something to 130-something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if new hires aren't being hired, new hires don't have any liability to start with. Mm-hmm. But what they do have is payroll that you can use to take that UAL contribution rate to apply to that payroll and get more contributions into the system.
That's interesting. Thank you.
Nick, did you have a question?
Well, that kind of answered my question, so I don't want to try to repeat it. That's an interesting thing. I mean, what the takeaway for me on this is that what we do in terms of payroll increases also have an impact on what we're contributing, and that's something I don't know that we necessarily, you might have been thinking about it, but I don't know that I was thinking about it. So it's just important to keep in mind that kind of thing. Are our retirement funds, this is really, I guess, for you all, are our retirement funds all invested in a single fund? And are they, I mean, like, I'm thinking here pre-2012, post-2012,
no,
that specifically.
They're all invested together. I mean, like, both of those funds are commingled.
Across Fire and Police?
Yes.
Okay.
But we have a multitude of investors.
Yeah,
and
I would assume that. But the corpus is the four together.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's like a pool of cash.
And just, why do firefighters not receive Social Security? I want to say we've talked about that before.
That's what they've chosen. So a firefighter can, if they wanted to opt in to Social Security, they could. But I think that's something that they would have to do with the pool.
So that's our fire. That's our department.
Yes, and then we wouldn't be able to change this particular fund. They would have to create a new one. Or say if we went to loggers, that could be a discussion if they would want to get into Social Security. They could at that time.
Okay.
For the people that would move.
Yes. Betsy.
Who oversees our pension funds?
Jim and I both sit on as liaisons for the pension board, and so we have a fire pension, a police pension, that both have pension boards that both have members from the police and fire, and then we have a police and fire investment board, and three of those groups together kind of oversee.
So are they the ones that actually do the investing?
That's what I'm asking too.
This is the person who does the investing. Yeah. One of the people. The other one is on Zoom. But
I mean, because we don't not really, we don't have a board that actually does the investments, do they?
The board makes suggestions, and then our financial advisors as well make suggestions to the board to say, hey, this is a good opportunity, a new opportunity comes up. I don't know if you remember, the latest one we did was Blue Owl, and it's an alternative investment, so they brought that to the board. The board thought that was a good idea, and so anytime we have a new alternative investment, we have to come to council for council approval. And so they came to council, you all approved it, and we'll fund it as soon as we can.
Will we have a presentation with the portfolio overview?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
You had that. All right, Don, you had your hand up next.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, do we have access to answer Betsy's question, I think, as to where it's invested, to the attachments to the pre-council agenda, and specifically this report, because it shows what funds it's everything is specifically invested in.
Yeah. That's on the attachment for the pre-council.
Yeah.
Agenda.
Yeah. So it answers that question. The other one I had was the long 50-page report that was also one of the attachments. I had a question in there. I don't know if we have access to it to bring it up or not, or I can tell you what page gives me a question.
Is it the last one?
This is the last. This is the latest.
My full report if there's.
Okay, what?
Yeah. Page in question is A5. There.
That's A6.
Oh, one.
No.
There we go.
Yeah, that one. And that is the question that I had, and this is what I was mentioning right before we started, Matthew. But fifth column from the left, the funded ratio. And you see that as we go from 2014 to 2023, it fluctuates a little bit in the beginning, but now it's gone from basically we're down to 50%.
So that would be basically because of, I think, what they've talked about previously.
Okay,
with
right.
The decrease in
expectations, and I understand that.
The decrease in police officers has a big
The experience study.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the overall trend. It looks like we're falling behind.
But that, again, that's because of the loss. I mean, you lost, what was it, about 30 police officers or so within that time period?
But between 2019 and 2020, okay, like I said, so I'm apparently missing something, or maybe,
so I guess maybe
academic speak or whatever.
What you're looking at, Don, here, so you see where they have those asterisks next to those lines?
Yeah, 16 and 21.
So that's when we did those experience studies where we adjusted the assumed rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the consequences of bringing that assumed rate of return down is that you're going to increase your unfunded liability, because what you assumed you're going to earn has changed. It's lowered. So what you thought you were going to return, what they were basically
working
off of,
right,
is adjusted down. So if you see from 16 to 20, it was sort of staying flat and relatively flat.
Yes.
Then it jumped back down again when we did that another evaluation study from 54 to 51. And then last year, this current year, what Mita was saying was the police officers, the higher and anticipated raises, and then the smaller staff is what kind of dropped that down an extra point. But it's been relatively flat, essentially. It's just those evaluations have come down to more realistic rates of return.
All right, then. If it's been flat, we're paying into it to try to pay this off. So if it's been flat, are we making progress? Is where I'm trying to go with this.
May I answer that?
I would say, go ahead.
I think the answer is yes. And the reason I would say that is when, let's take the police as an example. So their funded ratio was 56% a decade ago. Mm-hmm. But that 56% funded ratio a decade ago was based upon the premise that you were going to earn 7.5% each and every year going forward. And now if we were to measure this valuation under that same investment return assumption, I think you would see an improvement, I'm almost certain you would, over that 56%. It would be probably in the 60s to low 60s. So have you been making progress? I think the answer is yes. Where there's been more headwinds is people seeing that where we thought we could earn 7.25 or 7.5 10 years ago, we just don't think we can do that anymore. And it makes it look like we're not making progress. But I'll suggest you are. You're measuring your liabilities more accurately or more realistically or more appropriately. I don't want to say more accurately because nobody has a crystal ball. Has progress been made? Yes. Would actuaries like to see more progress being made? The answer is absolutely. Am I going to come in here and say to the council or to any audience, I'm really comfortable with the retirement system at a 50% funded ratio? And the answer is no. There is a plan in place to finance that unfunded accrued liability. Is it a long financing period? I can't dispute that it's not.
Right.
And to what I said before, if additional funds could be found to accelerate financing that unfunded accrued liability, you want the first person that would be cheering for that? That would be us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having said that, we just don't know if there is the ability to do that.
And I think this is the question for staff, for Jim, and so we know, you know, that this is our plan has been before our boards and our investors, and you know we have this plan for doing it. Is there the potential for any sort of additional, you know, sort of current investment, you know, add to it that we could do to improve the sustainability of the pension plan? Like, we've kind of kicked around this idea of, you know, we lost 20 people contributing to this, and you know, what percentage? And I know we're using some of those reserve things that have gone into reserves for potential vehicle purchase, you know, things that we have an idea of where those savings should go. But is there an opportunity that we could identify some for this?
I think that is what we had presented to council. I believe it was in April when we talked about the additional $500,000 for police, $500,000 for fire going into the I think that was something that staff at that time was comfortable with.
And is that in the fiscal year 25 budget?
I do not believe it is, but it is something that could be
amended
to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my question. We've identified the problem. Is this the cure?
I don't believe it's the absolute cure because this is a problem we'll continue to have. As long as we have the pension, we're always going to be fighting an uphill battle of getting to 100% funded. None of us will ever see that this fund be 100% funded. I don't want to say any of us. I guess there may be a few on there. Raise, I got a hand raised back there. But it's a long term. This is a long term situation, much like a mortgage. Something like this is the process that you go through. This is a plan that you go through.
A mortgage, though, I've got a 30-year mortgage, I know when it's going to be paid off.
And that's basically what we have here, and we're at 28 of that 30 years.
So that's where we, so we anticipate getting, we do have a date when we anticipate. And
yes.
Maybe I missed that. When is that?
28 or 27 years.
28 or 27 years.
We're
doing 27. So we have kind of
so that's that 28-year amortization
that's
you're
correct.
Talking about. Okay.
It has been basically.
Wait, no, Lisa, please don't talk when other people are talking.
Yes.
Were you done, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Did you have a question?
No, I was going to say, I think we're at the point where there shouldn't be any more surprises with respect to reductions in the investment return assumption. I think we've gotten to that point. I've heard actuaries say future experience studies should be boring. And I'm really looking forward to boring experience studies, to go into systems and say, you got to reduce it from 8 to 7.25. And by the way, you got to pony up big statewide systems an additional $1 billion. That's a pretty hard meeting to go into. Do I think we have a very good set of assumptions going forward? The answer is yes. If you're looking for a guarantee that you will be 100% funded in 28 years, the answer is no, because you're still at the mercy of the markets.
Sure.
And that's a big component of any retirement. It could be that they ramp you up more quickly. Nobody thought we would get to 100% funded for many systems in the late 90s. The plan was 30 years. 30 years became like 7 because the returns were so good that there was all this excessive investment income. So 28 years is the plan. If additional money comes in, that reduces the time period. But to suggest that it will harden or solidify that time period, nobody in this room can say that.
That makes sense.
Is there any wisdom, since we have full-time equivalent in the budget, that even when those positions aren't filled, that we consider that as additional funding into the pension plans?
Well, and I think before you start pulling numbers apart, I think it's more of a conversation with talking to the actuaries and also the pension advisor for as we look at our funding. So we don't want to just arbitrarily say, well, let's put this amount in, because we really have to understand exactly what does that mean and what is it on an annual basis in order to slope to increase our ability to get further past that 28 years. And so that's a more of a larger study. I'm not saying that there's not an additional amount that we can add, because that's where the first conversation occurred about adding $1 million, which is $500,000 per fund, to help speed up that amount. And so I think that would make sense. I just don't think we should just say, let's pick a number and say, let's put that in there. Because it all, again, it's all part to fluctuation of the market. So if we have a downturn in the market, you may invest really heavily, and you've lost a lot of what you've invested.
I got so that. I was just looking at trying to control one variable.
Right.
Control one variable that, but I don't know how that works in
the
world.
Yeah, I think the hard part about the different variables is, one, we have our staffing ratio, so we look at how many people that we're going to bring on board, also how many people that are leaving. And so remember, the people that are leaving are usually the ones who are the higher salaries, so they're paying more in, and as they're coming out, that all shrinks those numbers. And so it's really having a full holistic look, and so I think that's something that we've done in the past and that we can do again, but it's really having that long-term look, exactly how do we see ourselves getting down that path for a period of time.
Thank you. So that was done in the past?
Yes. That was something we presented, was it April or
it was
March?
Hey, we had a pre-council.
Pre-council discussion.
April, March or April.
Don, you had a question?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Okay, I'll pass.
I think, so is this something that our pension review boards review as far as that kind of question? Is like, would they make a recommendation to finance and thus council to be like, we think this year you should do, you know what I mean? Like, because
that,
of?
That was that study that we did.
Okay. And
that came through the actuary runs through the police and fire pension or the investment board. Okay.
And then my next question is actually for you all. So this is not, you know, we're hearing some of the conversation we're hearing about why there's a gap in the recruitment and retention for, especially in public safety, is obviously contributing to this gap that we have. And like we've heard that the reason why people are leaving is because, you know, they're worried about their retirement benefits or having to stay in it longer. Are you seeing this trend across the board in public safety and the other municipalities or groups that you cover?
I think the answer to that is yes. I did not think I would see, given what's happened in public employee retirement systems over the last 15 or 20 years, I did not think I would see benefit enhancements happening anytime soon. Out of the benefit enhancement proposals that I've seen in the last 3 or 4 years, and we've worked on some in a statewide plan, I've worked on some in another statewide plan, it's public safety related. It's generally not general employees or things of that nature. So at least in the last 3 or 4 years, there have been bills to improve public safety benefits.
And follow up to that, what is their funding source? Is it strictly just the general fund and contributions, or have they gone for a separate sort of like public safety, you know what I mean? Because I know the Springfield example we've heard is that they did like a public safety tax, and in part it was to do that. Do you have any? I know you know more of like the demographic ones, and maybe, but I didn't know.
The source of those funds, at least for the ones that we're aware of, that's beyond our. Actuaries will say the following. We don't care where the money comes from.
Okay.
We just need the money into the system.
Did you say we should ask our investor?
Yeah, that's more.
Mark, do you have any answer?
I'm not an investment banker, but we have a book of businesses across the country. Okay? So the source of funding is starting to come from commuter taxes and public safety taxes.
Okay.
We're starting to see that. We've seen it to our clients.
Okay. Yeah, Val.
This is probably because I'm the new person on council. And I don't have the historical recollection that everyone else does. But this was the opportunity to inject more money into the pension was presented in April. Do you recall, and it's not included in the fiscal year 2025 budget, do you recall why that didn't go forward?
But it's something that we talked about, and it was something that we knew would come up.
Yeah, I think it was going to be part of the discussion of now, we're talking about the budget. Because it wasn't something that was going to be done in April. It was part of what we planned to do in October with our current budget as we look at our new fiscal year. And so it should have been presented at this period of time as we're talking about this new budget.
So at our meeting later, we might make a recommendation for an amendment to be added to the list?
Yes. Okay.
I think we can make an amendment. Yeah.
And is it, I guess at this point in the game, is it reasonable to make an amendment that's going to change the budget? Would that be a significant change to the budget to work up and
the
window that we have available?
Well, no, I mean, it wouldn't be a significant change. We're talking about $1 million out of the general fund,
yeah.
So that's a $500,000 going to the police and $500,000 going to the fire pension. So, yeah, it's a significant increase, but it's something that we probably can absorb. But that is something that we have to look at.
Could potentially come from the percentage over the required reserves reserves.
Right.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Anything
else?
Yeah.
Next.
We got more.
We
got the next.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank
we
you.
Really appreciate thank the opportunity.
It was just as thrilling as you said it would be.
Thanks.
That's
Yeah. Yeah, we're just...
David, you can share now. Can you hear me?
We have sort of a slush fund up.
Right.
That's good.
It gets to be a problem after a while. And
I guess it's a little bit of...
If you want to find something, where's the money coming from? What are you getting rid of? But here's also...
Yeah.
And we just like to be conservative. No one wants to say, oops, we missed this.
David, can you hear?
This year, yeah. We show up in the middle of the
day. David, can you hear us?
Listen to the parents of the right came in 2 years ago.
I know.
David.
Yeah.
We just really don't have anybody that shows up in April. Don showed up in April, but, or I guess Lisa.
I can't get the screen.
Go to view gallery, maybe?
The challenge to show up when the train is already going.
No.
He can
talk.
Yeah, you can ask a few questions, but you also have to sort of just hope that this is going on.
Yeah.
You know what they're doing.
But this is, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, the fees that we're voting on in regular and this discussion about whether to inject the extra $500,000 to each.
I'd want to be careful about how they did that. But
occurs so close to when we're trying to approve the budget. Yeah.
I think here's how I feel like most of the budget is about 90-95% sort of like you want to understand
can
it,
you
but
move
it,
him?
This is what happens when you work in the first 5%.
There you go.
The reason I'm asking about it, you know, one of the days we're in the year is because we're getting very poor investment and so we were getting very piss poor return on
investment. It's trouble when I'm not.
I always have to make money too.
A good return on investment. And so that's why I'm like, let's just check on this. I mean, I have a financial advisor guy.
No, I think that's part of it. That's what he said.
Like, I have no idea. And I remember I had a woman that was my financial investor for a long time, and she's like, you know, I want to get out of this fund because this guy's 26. I don't know. This other guy's been around for 15 years, and he's done a really good job. You know, I'm like, okay, that's what I pay you for.
I can't unmute.
Don't make major changes, but every once in a while, it's
there.
Like, yeah.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Want to get on the video, David?
Like,
yes, please.
Oh, now you have to get my video.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost there.
I don't. You got a sick new partner?
I didn't know you had to do all of this.
The considerations are so different than the
typical
ones.
Really
the actuarial considerations are so much different.
Yeah, I'll back to the video. Yeah, I might have to get Dalton in here. This one.
Can you, on his participants, when you go to your list of participants, do they have an option for you to, so click on your participants down here. When you go to attendees on the three dots, do you have an ability to like make him, promote to panelists? And maybe that gives him some additional options.
There you go.
And then maybe he can like share his screen.
There it is.
Wait.
David, can you talk?
Now you're in panelist. There you are.
There it is.
Okay.
Hello, everyone.
We'll try this again.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you for having us, and thank you for letting us work with the city for almost four decades in different forms on this particular pension since 2011. I can answer the history part of it. I'm Mark Shigosky. I'm with UBS. I'm the original founder of a group within UBS called Princeton Investment Consulting.
Hey, Matt. Thanks. Sorry.
Princeton Investment Consulting, there's 11 members, four partners in that team. We're multi-generational. Obviously, I'm younger than David. I just took the markets harder than he has the past few years. Okay. So it's a career path for everybody in the group. Our group has been named in several periodicals, one being Barron's as the top 100 institutional consulting teams in the country, in the top quartile. We made our mothers proud with a lot of other accolades that we've gotten.
Congratulations.
Okay. I went to the University of Missouri. A lot of the council people know that. I graduated from the Graduate School of Public Administration. I came here on a National Presidential Fellowship.
As an aside, in my glory days, I ran track and coached here also. Okay, and then after that, I worked as a director in the Office of State Courts Administrator for a lot of years, and then I moved back to where I grew up and started where some of my friends were working, which is Wall Street, okay, in the old days. David joined us in, well, you can go through it, David.
Sure, and Matthew, just not to make you get up again, but just heads up, I can't share the screen because I can put up the bios as well. But while Matthew's walking over, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to have been working with Mark and being at UBS for the entirety of my career, which is 17 years, and working with the city of Columbia almost that whole time. And it's really been a privilege. I started off as an analyst. I am a numbers person and eventually evolved into being a full, what we call institutional consultant. So, you know, just some background, our group, UBS is a very large global wealth manager, but our group is a specialty group that focuses on working with what we call institutions, but those are things like, you know, pension funds, of course, because of the specialty knowledge and the, you know, the enhanced type of resource that we need to deliver to our clients. So happy to see you all today, and hopefully we can inform you on how the pension is being managed.
And within UBS, in terms of institutional consultants, there's 45 of us that are senior institutional consultants. David was one of the youngest ever to become a senior institutional consultant. I get to sit here and say I'm that old guy to this city because I worked as an intern in the city finance department when I was in graduate school. And the first certificate of conformance, I'm the one that put the statistical package together. So when you're talking about all these numbers, I spent time with was building 601 in the basement with the musty old records, pulling all the files out to build the first statistical package that the city had in their CAFR.
Thank
okay?
you for your service.
It was an experience. I'm going to answer a couple of things. I'm going to say both Mita and Heidi are two of the most clear actuaries that we work with. Okay, they may not be that clear to you, but they're clearer than most actuaries that come in that I can barely understand. Okay, but they're very clear. I do want to take a couple things because if I'm sitting in the audience or I'm sitting on this council, there's a few terms they used that I'd like to tear apart a little bit. And I'm going to get in trouble because David is a quant person and they're both quant people, so they can correct me because I'm going to take some latitude in what I'm going to say. But when they say the actuarial assumption, that's pretty much based on what's called a risk-free rate of return. And that's usually defined by the U.S. Treasuries, okay, because the Treasury is AAA rated by two of the agencies, now AA. That's the assumed rate you can make by taking no risk. You're betting on the U.S. government. So if you think about what Mita said, the assumed rate of return or the actual assumption in the 1980s and 1990s, you could go out and buy a Treasury at 8%, 9%, 12%. Okay, that's how they got to that 12%. And I wrote down numbers. So if you think back in the 80s, if I got an 8% return on my stock portfolio, part of what we do is actually asset allocation. If I got an 8% return on 50% in the bonds and a 10% on the stock, that's a total of 18%. Divide that by two, you had a 9% rate of return. They're assuming eight, you're beating it by 1%. Then you go back a few years ago, or you go now, you can get 4%, let's say, on a U.S. Treasury, it's like on the curve, and you make 8% in the market, that's 12%. We can make, again, divide it, you get a 6% rate of return. And when Mita said 2020, when we got to near zero on the Treasuries, 1%, if you're making 1% on your Treasury and 7% in the stock market, you're making 8%, you're making 4%, so the rates, the assumed rate had to come down. Is that fair, Mita? That was a way to say it. Okay, so I knew that was going to happen. Almost, okay. In terms of the fluctuations in the market, historically, because Mary, you asked the question, my career, 1987, 94, 98, 2008, and 2024 are the worst years. 1987 lasted about 4 days, okay? 1994 lasted about 3 months. 1998, with it was long-term capital, that was about 2 months. 2008 was the most devastating in my career. It was the near recession, okay? Near depression, rather, but it turned into recession, and that's when things started coming off the rails a little bit. And then we had 2020, 21, and 22, which is the 22 that you saw in there. So that was the COVID, and that's when the market first went down a lot and then came back. I think the important thing to keep in mind is when we took over in 2011, we were underfunded at that point, and there's two different philosophies you can take to manage money at that point. You can do what's called swing for the fences and take as much risk as you possibly can, or you can be conservative, and we are in Missouri, so we still took a conservative stance to grow the portfolio, and that paid off, I think, in 2022, when we were down 15%. Most pensions this size, we were down a lot more than that because we were much more conservative at that point. Now, we've gotten a little riskier, and I'm going to go through this, is this city is very fortunate. You asked the question, who's managing the money? We are the consultants to the board. We do not have discretion on at managing the money. The board makes the decisions. We come to them with an investment policy statement, which is a roadmap of how we're going to handle the money, and that's not us just doing it, it's the board. We do the asset allocation based on what the actuarial assumption is, and they come up with an actuarial assumption based on some of the capital markets assumptions we put in. We do the due diligence on all the managers. So you do not have mutual funds. You have indexes and you have individual managers, so we can see the stock positions and the stock and the bond positions so we can measure the risk, and I'll go through that. And then we do reporting for the board, and your reporting is on par with Fortune 500 companies in the largest cities in the country. That's something when I joined into this business I brought from finance, that your financial staff can go in and see the performance through the day before, and they also can upload, we went through this today, the general ledger and other reports into the system to save staff time. Okay, so your finance department is run very professionally. Both Matthew and Jim are really great at what they do in your staff. And just as important, I would say, of all the, and I'm going to be recorded so I can say this, of all the boards we sit with, yours is the most professional board there is, both on the police and fire side and the citizens that are on the board. You have a CIO, or chief investment officer, of an insurance company. You have a gentleman who's on the state pension that does what are called alternative investments, private equity, leveraged buyouts, private capital, okay? You have a financial advisor at one of the banks, and you have a seasoned other investor on the board, okay? So our sessions are very vigorous, and we shape the portfolio with them, we think, to be a very professional, and the returns we get reflect that. David, do you have anything to add? You want to put the allocation up?
Sure. You basically said what I was thinking as far as the engagement with the board and the diverse, the volunteers that are on that board and the diverse walks of life, but really very, very, they challenge us, they make us, you know, really make sure we're bringing our A game, and sometimes we learn from them. So it's one of our favorite clients, but it really is a board that works really well together to come up with the best solution for these pensions.
And Mark, I'm just really quick, I'm mindful over our time, and I love all the accolades you're giving us, but maybe okay. You should get into the presentation.
Okay, the last thing I'm going to say is the underfunded portion.
Yeah.
The unforeseen stuff Mita's talking about, some of the other things are, nobody born after 1998 has ever seen inflation, okay? 1980. So you have inflation in wages, you have inflation in benefits that was unforeseen and increasing now, so that makes it even harder to catch up.
Thank
in
you.
Terms of the portfolio, so what time do we have to finish by? 6:30?
So we have a 7 o'clock start time, and I usually like to stop us 10 to 5 minutes before that so we can get there.
We'll be mindful of that. So
thank you.
Basically, this is the asset allocation of the portfolio. We're 32.4%, the purple, in bonds. The rest are in equities or stock, okay? Large cap makes up 30.3%, small cap is 7.8%, and international is 15.9%. Do I have that right, David?
That's right.
Okay, so what's important within those groups, and you'll see it on the next page, is we have two different styles of management. One is indexing, okay? That's going in and buying the S&P 500, you've heard it, buying the Russell 2000, buying the over-the-counter market, which are QQQs. Those are extremely low cost, but you're going to do exactly what the market's doing. To add potential for better returns, we have active managers. And active managers, you can think of the fact that somebody's sitting there doing a lot of research and they're going to buy Walmart as opposed to Target and build a portfolio around better ideas in the rubric or the investment policy that they have. David, do you want to add anything to this?
Sure. So just to highlight what Mark said, index fund is a low-cost exposure. I'll point out two of them I shouldn't see you highlighting. So the Vanguard Growth, that's an index fund, and you can tell by the expense it's 0.04. and the S&P 500 is also an index fund. So we're complementing that with investment managers, take the top two, MFS and Large Value, that we're evaluating whether or not they will add value above and beyond an index fund. And that could be either they're going to outperform or they provide less risk and so forth. And in our opinion, there are some places in the investment universe where index funds are more appropriate than others. And so those are the types of thoughts that go into the decision-making when building a portfolio. You know, how much to go to the indexes, how much to delegate to managers that are trying to beat an index, how much should go into the large portion of the market. These are companies that you may, you know, be very well familiar with, the big tech stocks, Apple, you know, Microsoft, Amazon. Then how much you go into smaller parts of the market, maybe where there's companies that are not yet discovered, a little bit more high risk, but higher potential return. The other thing I'll add is this bottom section, alternative investments. Mark alluded to it, but 3 or 4 years ago, this allocation was zero, and it was with active discussion, a lot of education, and some encouragement from some of the board members to continue to build this allocation out. It takes time. These are specialty managers in parts of the market that are that ideally provide additional return, but you know, part of it is finding the right alternative managers that are going to really add value to the pension. So that's what we've been doing over the past few years, and the goal is to continue to build this allocation to represent a larger portion of the allocation.
And the thought process behind the alternatives, we did not press on it. The current board has been very good about working it through, and the city council has passed what we've brought to the table. But again, as I said, there's four generations, so there's four different types of opinions and life experiences in investing. We weren't pushing hard on that segment of the investments because they're all dependent on where interest rates are. So the lower the interest rate when you go to buy a house or you go to buy a commercial building, the better potential for upside when you go to sell it, right? Because you're not borrowing at a higher rate. So when rates started going up, we started pressing on it on the bottom three. REIT is a real estate, that's BlackRock. Real Estate, Blue Owl is a technology company, and Blackstone Private Credit is where Blackstone itself is lending money to companies that need to borrow where the banks are not lending at this point. So they make the spread on it. The one that we did before rates started rising is Canyon Partners at the top. It's distressed debt. Translation of that is when a company gets in trouble and they can't pay their debt off, there's people that read through all the legal documents and they look at the value of what's holding that debt up and they will buy it. They've done very well for us. They're returning about 11%. So we have a combination of things in there. We have debt, we have real estate, we have technology, and we have private credit at this point. The goal right now is to get it to 10%, and then as we get comfortable, maybe move it up to 15%. The key to that is it increases the cost. Okay, you can see it's at 1.58, 1.33. You're buying into those funds at the same rate that a Johnson & Johnson or Walmart buys into those funds. Okay, through UBS and the power that we have with the amount of money that we have, we go directly in at the cheapest possible price for the city pension. So you're getting the same rate. If you went through smaller firms, you'd probably be paying 2 or 3% more for the same. Okay. Last time we were in here, it was at 0.39% overall cost of the funds. Okay, that includes our fee. That puts you in the bottom quartile for the amount that you're paying to have the investment advisor and those fund managers. So if you went into Eagle or Kayne Anderson, you'd probably be paying 0.75%. You're paying about half because of the size that we have in our book of business. So you're getting the advantage of extra money going into the performance and not paying for the assistance you're getting for managing it. Yes. It's okay.
Yeah, Lisa. I assume you automatically reinvest all dividends?
Correct.
And yeah. The style of management that's, I don't have any particular questions about that, but I was just wondering, in a big picture, you talked about some other funds like, you know, like American funds or Franklin Templeton, and where you get break points and have in a more they're sold sometimes with the idea that you're the portfolio manager, that they have longer standing portfolio managers at each at some of those firms. I was just curious, but you get a better buy-in on these, and I was just wondering if you did. Were these in certain asset classes, and then you took them out, and then you sold them again, and then you buy, you bought different, or are you going to stay in these funds?
No, we change them, and we have watch lists when they're not performing. Actually, to what you just said, if you look under International Capital Group International, that's the parent corporation of American Funds. And if you went into the American Mutual Fund, we're paying, or the city's paying, 0.38%, you'd be paying almost 0.75 going through the cheapest mutual fund.
Yeah.
And in this case, we're able to see every single stock that's owned, and we can do our own analysis and risk management on it.
That's fine. Okay, thanks. Thank
okay,
you.
It's cheaper and more transparent.
Yeah, thank you.
Or less expensive, I shouldn't say cheaper.
Yeah, thanks.
Any questions on the portfolio? Okay, now we're going to go from the actuarial assumption and how we view the difference in what you need to put into the portfolio. So if you look at the bottom, okay, this is a run going back to 2000. So when we took over advising on this plan, we took the statistics as far back as we could with good data, which was to 2000. There was data all the way back to like 92, but we didn't know if it was good enough. The problems the city is having now did not start 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It started in the 90s because money was not put in. Money, the pension was meeting the actuarial assumption, but the maturity of the plan, the number of people that were going to retire into the future, was not going to be covered by the number of people or the growth of the public safety and fire departments. Mm-hmm. So you have this mismatch, like a bell curve going up and the investments going here. Mm-hmm. So power of compounding, $29 million was put in was the value of the portfolio in 2000. There was money put in prior to that of $15 million. It's grown to $192 million since 2000. So in 24 years, it's grown $148 million plus $15 million, okay? There's been $1 million put in since we've been on the pension, which is from 2011. That's what we know as the deposit. More importantly, the amount of the benefits that are being paid out right now are not coming out of this pension, the full pension. It's not a closed loop. We have not seen any new dollars other than that $1 million coming in. As a matter of fact, we've drawn out $9.5 million to pay benefits. So when you're asking how much money has to go in, okay, we actually have a negative draw on the portfolio. So everything that we make, a bunch of it gets paid out over time right now. So the benefits that are paying in, plus what we take out of the pension, are the benefits that are being paid to the participants. Is that clear? Or?
One more time.
Yeah.
Okay. So if, and Mita can go through it, if $10 million is being paid in benefits and contributions from the city in the trailing fiscal year to date, that was not enough to cover the benefits. We had to draw out $248,000 out of this account to pay the benefits for the year to date. We're going back 12 months, fiscal year to date, I'm sorry, year to date, let's go 1 year, so it's trailing 1 year. We had to pull out $1.5 million out of here to meet benefit payments. So when the benefits are paid, it doesn't hit this portfolio at this point. Okay, it's not what you think it's doing. So if $10 million is being accumulated by the city contributing and the police and fire making contributions, that's being paid mostly to the benefits to the people that are retired at this point. So putting $1 million in, I'm not sure we'll solve that problem.
It's not going to. It's just going to pay people, not to this.
Correct.
Okay.
It'll drop the number that we're pulling out at this point. So if you put $1.5 million in the trailing year, we would keep all the profits that we have in the portfolio.
Why wouldn't we still want to do that just to make
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying it's not going to solve the initial problem.
Right.
Over time, it will accumulate and help a lot from compounding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And would you invest it all in
questions? Yeah. I think he was still just using the example.
I think that's an important point to understand, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have much.
David, you want to say anything to that?
Was there a question?
Well, you want to go through in your terms to make it clear, because we've talked two different ways, so.
Yeah, so, you know, just think of it, another way to think about it is that the city has its investment accounts, and then it has an outside banking account. And when payroll, you know, with holds funds for pension contributions or pays out, sometimes those city contributions don't all come to the investment side because there's immediately benefit payments that need to go out. So when we're thinking about the actuarial rate of return of 6.25%, or if you look at these investment earnings, if there were more money in the pool to work for the pension, then the investment returns would be higher because that because the percentage would be, you know, applied to the money that's in the portfolio. But what Mark's saying is that we have a pool, and instead of getting in money, so far we are sending out more money than we're getting in. And that ultimately does have an effect on the compounding growth of the time. I hope that helped.
Don, do you have a question? Don's got a question.
I think you just answered it, but again, if we look at the one-year column, as you just said, we're bringing out $1.5 million more than we're contributing. Now, fortunately, the earnings, investment earnings, compensate for that, so the balance is going up or maintaining. But if we wanted to actually see some progress, so it's a term I would like to use, we need to probably try to minimize or so our net contribution at a minimum is zero. So that way all the, you know, so it would, we're putting in as much, at least as much as we're taking out, instead of taking out more than we're putting in. Yeah. We're eating into the capital.
Right.
Okay.
The other thing I'll add when it comes to pension funds and the cash flow dynamics of them, it also depends on the maturity of the pension fund and where you are or where we are in the life cycle of the liabilities. So pension funds are, you know, they work when there are current employees paying into a fund to ultimately fund the retirees. But that ratio, if that ratio is off, then that's going to affect the cash flow. And sometimes that's inevitable because a pension fund is more mature, and so there's going to be more retirees than current employees. But that's also an element that's going to influence, so we can fast forward 5 years, and if everything else stays equal, I don't know the answer to this, but Mita would. If everything stays equal, the cash flow might change because you're at a different life cycle of the pension.
Any questions?
How do we go deeper with this? How do we sit on this? Because we're getting so close to time and have an opportunity to ask more questions after.
It can be part of our discussion, like to come up for also continue it at the September 3rd for part of that.
Or if there's a paper analysis that you're looking for them to try to pull, you know, that may be the question, and they can bring that back as part of the conversation.
Did you have more, though?
That's it.
No. Oh. So then you can also ask some of, I mean, I imagine some of it is like just the thinking about, because we've been talking about trying to bring down, I mean, you know, the example of the mortgage, right? Your capital, like your principal, you know, you're trying to pay down so you don't pay as much. So if I'm understanding this correctly, year to date is this year, we've paid out 249 over what? In addition to what we took it, is that?
Let me
yeah, thanks, Jim.
Yeah.
So the police and fire pension fund is it's its own fund within the city. Mm-hmm. There is every paycheck, every time there's a pay period, money goes into there from the city and from the active firefighters and police officers. Okay. At the end of every month, there is a payment going out to all the people in there, the pensioners. So what Mark is saying here is that over the course of a fiscal year so far, we've had to ask Mark to draw down from this pool $248,000 because we have paid out more than what we brought in mm-hmm. through our contributions. A lot of that is kind of a cash flow issue due to drop payments. So if you remember how the drop works, there's this buildup of a liability over the course of that time someone's in the drop.
So, like, for instance, let's say high positions,
very,
like
yeah.
chiefs,
yeah, like
retire.
Let's say a fire chief retires,
yep.
right. stay in the drop for 5 years.
Yeah.
There's a very big payout of that.
So we don't
Well,
let
oftentimes
go.
That cash flow is not there to cover that payout. Right. So we need to go to Mark and say, hey, we need to move money out of here to cover that payout. Now, I'm not saying that, I think if you look at those slides I gave you where it showed the amount we were paying retirees and the amount we were paying or we were putting in from the contributions, yeah. You're going to see it's negative. So it's not just that, but oftentimes what you're going to see is when those drop payments come due, there's a big payout. And I can tell you, for example, this fiscal year, the only time we've had to do one of these is when we've had those drop payments come due. So that is a component of this that might not be as transparent, you don't think about quite.
So putting a million towards this actually could have, because we don't expect to have...
You could have, yeah, putting, I mean, it'll have benefits to the fund, because there's either more $1 million to cover the difference between the contributions and the payouts, and there's a little bit to cover the drop, so for sure. And that would make it so I wouldn't have to call Mark up and say, hey, move some money out of that.
So when David said it's a cash flow issue, so if the money gets pulled out and the market's high, that's okay. But if the money gets pulled out, like let's say the Monday that the Japanese market was down 12%, we were down 1,000 points, if the money got pulled out that day, then when the market bounced back to the end of the week, we had less money working.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's also a timing issue when the funds come out, and we don't have no control over that. That's when you need the money.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Other questions for our investor? Any for staff, then?
I guess one question. There's been discussion about whether we should get rid of that drop program.
Well, it's been extended for 4 more years, so that's not really relevant. Now, there are other aspects to the drop than just cash flow issues. MEDA has done some analysis for us, and this is a way bigger conversation than we have. But if you could...
I almost wasn't going to ask, and then I thought, well.
So the drop lasts for 5 years. If you can keep people in the drop for 5 years, it does have a net benefit to your pension, because that's 5 years that we would be paying them out money, and as they work for us, they're all providing us a service for one thing.
Right.
But they're also paying. They're still paying into the pension, and the city's still paying into the pension on their behalf. So there's a bit of an offset there, in how that works. So. But and then additionally with that drop, we're going to have a period coming up when this one expires where there won't really be anybody eligible for the drop for 5 years, because we pushed back the time frame that, well, for police anyway, we pushed that time frame back from a 20-year best period to a 25-year period. So there will be a period of time where there won't be anybody who will be drop eligible. The drop will become very small at that point. Fire might have some people because there's a little different.
Any other questions on this? I think we'll also look for sort of like staff recommendations on what could kind of, and then also I know from our advisors as well as our board, the sort of recommendations on kind of practices as we're seeing this continue to grow, this gap. Yeah.
And other, maybe even other alternative creative retirement options too that we might need to consider.
It's going to be more actuarial, but we can do the finance stuff. We can give
I'm
you best
sorry.
I was like, I couldn't hear either.
I can't
of you.
Hear the question. I can't hear the answer.
What was your question, Lisa?
I was thinking also, just thinking out loud, and also maybe some other retirement options, too, to think about down the road.
Yeah, we've talked about the potential of eventually moving it to, like, loggers for public safety. But obviously that would take, we'd still have people pulling from this pension, and you need those people contributing to it. So it's like, how do we then contribute? And that's where an additional funding source might be the conversation. Yeah. Well, thank you for this. Thank you for doing it on kind of a quick turnaround. I know we just asked you guys this like a month ago, so appreciate it. Because we've got 15 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and end our pre-council and see you all in there at 7 o'clock for the second public hearing of our budget.